Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, trusted for remodeling projects big and small. Ideas at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. This past Sunday marked 100 days since May 16th, the day an EF3 tornado tore a path through the St. Louis area with the heaviest impact in the city of St. Louis. The storm inflicted damage on more than 10,000 buildings, including homes, businesses, churches, and schools. It broke and uprooted thousands of trees, and it profoundly changed the lives of thousands of St. Louis residents in ways that continue to surface. This week, St. Louis Public Radio has been looking into the first 100 days of tornado response and recovery. On Monday, we spoke with two STLPR reporters who shared what they've seen and heard on the ground. We also met two St. Louis moms who were strangers before the tornado and are now fierce friends trying to repair their homes and their shared community. And today, we're focusing on what the city of St. Louis has done and what's to come with its top official, Mayor Kara Spencer. Mayor Spencer, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
Now, we reached out to you in advance, those of you listening, for your questions and comments for Mayor Spencer, and we'll get to some of that. You can also give us a call right now at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. So let's get into this. Mayor, a couple weeks ago, you said that it could take several years and not months, to remove debris left by the tornado. Why?
Well, we know we just have an enormous amount of debris in the community. You know, we've been sitting down for months now, since right after the tornado, with the emergency management folks, the professionals at the state level, as well as our partners at FEMA and the Army Corps of Engineers, to really get a good, firm handle of what that project of debris removal and demolition looks like. Mm-hmm. And it's estimated to be in the hundreds of millions of dollars. And we know that on the ground here, you know, even from a contractual, from a procurement side of things, that the city would be enormously challenged to do that enormous body of work. Mm-hmm. So as many of your listeners may know, we have been pushing for the Army Corps of Engineers to hold that body of work so that it can be accelerated. And we are leaning into our partners at the federal level and at the state level to help make that happen. But if we can't make that happen, Elaine, it would take years for the city to be able to administer that level of contracts and really do that enormous amount of work. I think if we can get the Army Corps here, we'll see that accelerated tremendously, and that's why we're pushing so hard to get that work done through them.
And where is the status on that? What are the conversations with the Army Corps of Engineers like?
Well, the Army Corps has been a helpful partner in identifying just that the enormity of the scope of that work. They've been on the ground with us, really wrapping our collective heads around what the proposals, what that would look like. But it's not up to them whether or not they'll do that work. You know, one of the really, really serious challenges right off the bat has been the ever-changing underlying federal system. You know, right off the bat when the tornado hit, you know, our office was really gobsmacked, if you will, by the lack of engagement, the direct engagement on the federal front. You know, when the Joplin tornado hit, for example, FEMA was on the ground immediately providing housing, temporary housing, debris removal, and really running the response. And in this enormous time of turmoil at the national level, you know, we were really left to do the vast majority of response here alone. Mm-hmm. And what that looks like is trying to figure out exactly how to do all these pieces.
And so with the cleanup work, what is it specifically that puts it beyond the capacity of the city of St. Louis to handle it?
Well, you know, as I mentioned, you know, the ever-changing federal landscape, the rules were changing on a daily basis. And so, you know, initially, we were leaning into the Army Corps to do that enormous body of work. And within just 3 days of our national, the declaration of it being a national disaster, the rules changed, and there was a cap put in place for Army Corps involvement to not exceed $100,000, which, as you can imagine, would just be a small amount of time. And the reason I'm mentioning that is we were really hoping for that. I mean, I think it's a normal course for the Army Corps to be able to come into a city and do the enormous lift of debris removal. You can still drive through the impacted zone and see enormous debris, whether it's giant trees that have fallen, housing that is so badly damaged that residents themselves are looking for help demolishing the structures they own to provide a level of safety and security to the surrounding community. I mean, the amount of debris, Elaine, in the community still, and I'm talking about housing stock, enormous trees, things that regular residents don't have the capacity to remove, is just huge.
So in July, the city did sign a $3 million contract with a locally based company, Spiritus Worldwide, to remove debris from private property. You've described a little bit of that, but then the company backed out, saying that the work was beyond their capacity. So practically speaking, how big a setback was that?
It was a pretty big setback, and I'll be frank, it was pretty disappointing. You know, we put out an RFP, and you know, we put that contract in place with good faith that Spiritus would do that work. A large amount of that was in the right of way. We recognize that in order to remove large amounts of debris from private property, there's a lot of legal hurdles that are involved, including right of way, permission, there's an insurance factor, and a whole host of really, really complicated sets of permissions that need to be authorized to do that sort of work. But to make sure that we have the ability to remove debris that residents are pushing into the right-of-way and putting on public property and really getting out of the community, that is something that is still a huge, huge need. And we've pivoted. We are deploying our city resources, and we have other contracts in the works to make sure that we are able to do that work. But it was a pretty big setback, Elaine, and pretty disappointing to all of us.
So then the contract for bid was put out again by the city. What's the status of that effort right now?
We are moving forward with that. And as I mentioned, you know, we have pivoted our city staff to be all hands on deck. You may remember right off the bat, you know, the night of the tornado, we put in place an emergency declaration that lifted all restrictions on the city workforce, empowered our city workforce, and really requested them to come in and work overtime. And they did in droves, and were enormously helpful in getting the first tranche of debris out of the streets, out of alleys, so our emergency responders could get through, so Ameren could get through and restore power. Mm-hmm. We're doing that again to some extent, and we are leaning into private partnerships with contracts to get additional debris out of our community.
And speaking of partnerships or people around, Kyla on Facebook asks, have any of the surrounding municipalities offered to help us with cleanup like they did in Clayton? And as background here, Clayton said about 20 other municipalities helped them with debris.
You know, one of the things we've identified is some of the structural deficiencies that we walked into this disaster with. We had mutual aid agreements with our fire and police departments in place, and that's what enabled those surrounding community departments to come to our aid in the immediate aftermath. But when it came to city services like forestry, et cetera, while many of the surrounding municipalities have mutual aid agreements with each other, like Clayton, for example, as was pointed out by your listener there, the city of St. Louis didn't have any of that in place.
Mm-hmm. So is the...
And that's right. And so while some of the surrounding jurisdictions did step up and have stepped up to volunteer to support, having that network in place and having that structural piece in place, where they go, how they go about doing it. Those mutual aid agreements were something the city didn't have. Mm-hmm. And we are working on establishing those so that moving forward, we have those mutual aid agreements where those surrounding communities can plug and play. And we can, in turn, help them help our surrounding communities in those other ways when emergencies hit our region.
So we're talking then kind of specifically about city and county working together to combine emergency management response?
Well, in the case of mutual aid, what that looks like, so in the immediate hours following the tornado, we had fire departments from Jennings, from Brentwood, you name it, and they were here because we had those mutual aid agreements in place. So you have to have a command structure. You have to have some of those agreements, the legal agreements in place to make sure that you're sharing those types of resources. The same is true when it comes to debris removal, when it comes to street repair and things of that nature. Getting those mutual aid agreements in place across jurisdictions is a way to share resources in time of emergency. But in other times as well, we're looking at ways to improve ways we respond or are able to support large events, for example, Elaine, mm-hmm. And other things of that nature.
But specific to emergency management response, do you think that city and county should combine?
Well, we've talked about that, and we are in the process of looking at ways to better respond regionally. I sit on the board of East West Gateway. This has been a topic of conversation there, and we'll continue to explore ways to better, not just city and county, but I would say the entire St. Louis region, better support each other in times of mass disaster. And this is going to be an incredibly important conversation moving forward as the federal government continues to shift. You know, they have pulled back and clearly are making massive national decisions on whether or not emergency management responsibility falls on the shoulders of cities and states. This was the question. This is a set of turmoil we have been grappling with, here locally, mm-hmm. But it's something our nation needs to be asking ourselves. And if we're going to straddle or put that burden on the local government entities, we've got to have time mm-hmm. to prepare, and we've got to have the resources locally to be able to do that work.
Now, speaking of time and the federal government and FEMA, earlier this week on Tuesday, FEMA denied your request to extend the deadline for individuals to apply for federal assistance. FEMA had already extended the application deadline by 18 days. Why, Mayor Spencer, was another extension warranted?
You know, we believe that another extension was warranted, and we spelled this out in our request. We continued to see residents coming and filing applications on a daily basis. And to us, that indicated a continued need for FEMA to continue to take new applications. We do know that over 10,000 applications have already come in. Over 7,800 have been approved, 7,800 households, and over close to $40 million has actually gone out the door. I want to make sure that we're getting the word out there that, you know, if you've applied and haven't yet been approved, just because we didn't get that extension does not mean that you can't supplement your application and get approved. This was just for new approvals. But we do think we are disappointed that FEMA didn't extend that. But we still have time to get those additional applications approved if they haven't yet been.
Mm-hmm. And the city put in $30 million in interest accrued on RAM settlement money into a tornado relief fund. How is that money being used?
Well, we've done a few things, Elaine, as I mentioned on the front end. When we assigned that emergency declaration the night of the tornado and freed up city resources, we put our staff on almost every department on overtime that looked like forestry, it looked like refuse, police, fire. Even the assessor's office was coming in that weekend and coming in, putting in many, many, many overtime hours to be supportive of the overall effort of responding to the tornado. And so that's added up to some extent. But we've also, as you mentioned, put together $30 million in interest from the RAM settlement funds into a package that looks like a handful of things. We are standing up in a major way, the nonprofit community that stepped up on their own from day one, but making sure that we have some long-term funding for them to continue that work. We've also got disaster case management in the works there. We want to make sure that as a part of this, we're doing everything to track residents impacted so that we can keep as many of them here and understand their needs moving forward.
So the resident impact, though, I want to make sure we get to this. $30 million, is that money helping people fast enough?
Oh, fast enough. You know, Elaine, of course not. You know, the need is immediate. You know, fast enough would look like having FEMA on the ground providing emergency temporary housing the day of, like they did in Joplin following the tornado, like they've done in other mass disasters. That would be fast enough. But left to cities to have to figure out and pull together solutions, we are both working as hard as we can and also recognizing that the work we're doing can't possibly move fast enough for the folks that have been devastated by this tornado.
We need to take a quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue our conversation with the City of St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer and 100 days of city response to the May 16th tornado. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about the City of St. Louis's response to the May 16th tornado, which tore through St. Louis 105 days ago. And we're discussing that with the city's mayor, Kara Spencer. Now, before the break, Mayor Spencer, we were talking about funds for response and recovery, how they're being spent. And in June, the Missouri legislature passed a bill to provide St. Louis with $100 million for storm relief. On Facebook, Democratic State Rep. Marty Joe Murray asks, Marty Joe Jr., that is, asks, where is that money? Has it touched down?
Well, Representative Murray voted for that bill, and as who well knows, was appropriated through the Department of Public Safety. What we're looking to do, Elaine, is really do that, focus that on the initial huge body of work of debris removal and demolition that we need to have done. And as we lean into that work we were talking about earlier with the Army Corps, what the body of work looks like, whether we have to handle that here locally with our state partners or do that through the federal government, will determine kind of how we do that. But actually, the state passed two measures, that $100 million that goes through the Department of Public Safety at the state level, and a $25 million package that was really focused on and underinsured. And this was the result of some community engagement that the governor did, particularly in For the Ville, just a few days after the tornado, and sitting down with those folks and asking and hearing what was needed most. And it was to fill the gap for those that were un and underinsured. And those $25 million are going through a process right now of RFPs, and we should hopefully start to see those funds reach the community here in the coming weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, those state funds are slower than we'd like. Certainly, but the state legislature did pass a pretty unprecedented set of fundings, thanks to our representatives, including Representative Murray.
Now, speaking of the timeliness as well of response, Melanie Marie asks, were you upset about the self-determined, self-deployed T-shirts by the people's response? And do you, in retrospect, feel like it was premature, a premature move to tell the community not to self-deploy?
Oh, am I mad about that? Absolutely not. I mean, I think, the community was right to self-deploy in the ways that they, many of the ways that they did. What I was speaking to, I think what was referenced, and I could have done a better job clarifying on the front end, was that in the night of the tornado, we were asking folks to stay home that night. And primarily because, you know, we had a lot of gawkers, disaster gawkers, that were just truly, you know, clogging up our roads and gawking at people's misfortune. We saw it throughout the community, and it was really quite disheartening to see. We were asking those folks to stay home. We also had miles of downed electrical wires. We needed to get our emergency responders out. We needed to check every single house. And with folks clogging up our roads just to view and gawk at what was going on was something we were very strongly discouraging. And I stand by that. But I also am so grateful to the folks who did deploy in many, many meaningful ways in the days following once we were able to get those emergency responders.
Now, this week, Mayor Spencer, City Hall made two announcements. On Wednesday, there's the announcement about who will be part of the Civic Leaders Recovery Advisory Committee. That's a committee that consists of 30 members total. What is that committee's charge?
Well, the Civic Leaders Advisory Recovery Advisory Committee is really going to be leading, having regular discussions on leading kind of the big thinking on the recovery long term. But we also announced that we're opening up an application for a community-driven, resident-driven advisory council. Those applications are going to be open through September 10th, and we are looking forward to putting together a working group of community to help really triage the day-to-day response in a long-term capacity. So while these folks are serving in a sort of visionary capacity, there's so much work to be done, Elaine, and we want these folks in my office and the city's recovery office to be led by both these sort of visionary thinkers, but the community-led effort is going to be a working group that is going to be have a major impact in the directional work that we're doing here
so
at the city.
From a resident's point of view, then, what does that triage look like?
What do you mean the triage?
You'd mentioned triage and sort of taking care of, yes.
Just the day-to-day. I mean, as I mentioned, there's the day-to-day component. There's also, you know, we've got to prioritize what we're doing, moving through the next several years, how we're going to be rebuilding our community. I mean, the debris removal and demolition work is just the first step in a long road of recovery and rebuilding, and really having that roadmap be built by community is vital to being successful. These are the folks in the group that was announced that will be figuring out the funding and the long term in the broader context, but the community-driven, the community advisory council that we've opened up the applications for and have not been announced will be really driving what their work needs to look like.
Mm-hmm. On that point of community, children, schools, that's part of that. And because of the tornado, 7 St. Louis public schools are temporarily closed, and those students are going to other schools. Earlier this month, we talked about Sumner High School students attending classes at Stevens Middle School. And then there are charter schools like those in the Confluence Academy system that says that 900 of its students were impacted by the tornado on May 16th. So SLPS is governed by an independently elected school board. We understand that. But as mayor, what is it that you want to see happen to the schools that closed because of the storm?
Well, I do want to see a comprehensive plan from SLPS on what this looks like moving forward. I was grateful to welcome Sumner students back to school last Monday with Superintendent Borishade. The enormously energetic Sumner alumni community came out in droves to welcome students back on Monday and had the opportunity to speak to several students. Of course, that doesn't represent the entire student body, but I was really encouraged by how excited students were to go back to school despite being in a different building. The enthusiasm and hope that I felt that morning with the students returning to school was really, really encouraging. Mm-hmm. You know, the sense of community that exists outside of a particular building was really, really magical. Of course, I want to see communities made whole, and I want to see a long-term path for what the education component looks like. Most importantly, I want to see all of our St. Louis Public School kids and all of our kids beyond the charters, et cetera, that you mentioned that enrolled it and expected to go to school in the city of St. Louis come and actually do that.
So you do want to see these schools reopen.
I want to see those kids educated, whether or not we can specifically open those school buildings. Elaine, we're going to have to look at the damage done, et cetera. One of the tough questions here that we're going to be facing in the years ahead is what happens to our St. Louis public school districts with a dwindling population. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm a St. Louis public school mom myself. I wholeheartedly believe in the district, and I want to see it succeed. And as we look at the population loss in our student body, we've got to be realistic about what that looks like so that we can spend our limited education dollars on educating our kids and not the buildings themselves, especially when so many of them, even before the tornado, were at less than half capacity.
So you went to Sumner. You could have gone to any other school. Why did you go there? And, you know, Sumner being such an historically significant institution, I mean, it was the first school to graduate Black students west of the Mississippi River. I mean, is that one of the schools that you want to make sure does reopen?
That is one of the schools that has, of course, one of the most important histories in our community. And, you know, I not only went to their school opening that day, I was at their alumni gala the weekend before and truly blown away by the Sumner community. You know, the strength in that community, the resiliency and the pride going back through generations is truly phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And supporting Sumner through what this next chapter looks like, hopefully continuing that Sumner pride and continuing that Sumner community.
And we want as many people as possible, right, to feel proud of where they are, being St. Louis residents. We have about a minute or so left. Ali Rand, who is a St. Louis resident, on our show earlier this week, had a question. I'd like to hear, after 100 days, what you think, Mayor, that you should have done differently. Do you have regrets? As an average citizen, there are things that I would have done differently now that I've had this firsthand experience. So I know she has them too.
Yeah, that's such a thoughtful question and one I think I'll be grappling with for the rest of my life, I assume. I have to say that I am so enormously proud of our city workforce, the mayor's office, several of whom I inherited from the previous mayor, but many are who were new to city government, who worked 16, 20-hour days for weeks on end to try and respond. And we also recognized during that time that we were not doing enough and that we could not respond adequately to the massive needs in our community. What I would have done differently, you know, of course, there are regrets as well as pride. You know, if I could go back in time, I think, you know, I certainly would have worded the request to stay home that night a little differently and would have been able to deploy resources to the nonprofits and the folks on the ground in a faster manner.
Mm-hmm. We will definitely be talking about this more in the future. Mayor of City of St. Louis, Kara Spencer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for this thoughtful conversation, Elaine.
Today's episode was produced by our executive producer, Alex Hoyer. Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see time is of the essence?
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.